Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. One of the best things you can do to improve your health is get at least 7 hours of quality sleep every single night. I know, it's hard to get that much sleep. Your mind keeps you awake, you're thinking about things, you get uncomfortable, you wake up early, and you just can't fall asleep again. There are hundreds of reasons why you can't get 7 hours of quality sleep every single night, and I've probably at least told you 100. But hey, listen, it's super important because your body heals itself when you sleep. And if you're not getting enough quality sleep, you're increasing your risk of disease and making it harder to lose weight. Yes, weight. Would you like to know an easy way to get more quality sleep every night? Make sure you're getting enough magnesium. Believe it or not, around 75% of people don't have enough of it, which helps explain why so many people have sleep problems. Unfortunately, most magnesium supplements are not full spectrum, so they won't fix your magnesium deficiency or help you sleep better. There are actually 7 unique forms of magnesium, and you must get all of them if you want to experience its calming, sleep-enhancing effects. That's why I recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. Simply take 2 capsules before you go to bed and you will be amazed by how much better you sleep and how much more rested you feel when you wake up. For an exclusive offer for my listeners of the Health Fix Podcast, you guys want to go over to www.magbreakthrough.com/healthfix and you can save up to 42%. Yes, that's right. 42% savings on Magnesium Breakthrough when you go to www.magbreakthrough.com/healthfix. Hey, Health Junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Dr. Alan Goodwin. He is a licensed psychotherapist in California, and we are going to be talking all about surviving the holidays, the mindset, watching your triggers, being aware of what triggers you, and just really having some compassion for yourself and others. The interesting thing about Dr. Alan is that he was a lawyer before he became a licensed psychologist, which I find extremely fascinating. And he also is the author of a book, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind. It's a book all about getting the mind right before you do any surgical procedures. Not exactly related to the holidays topic, but fascinating stuff, and it ties all back together in terms of mindset, thinking about how things are before these holiday parties, what you're going to take away from them, and just how you let it impact you. Because you have the choice to enjoy the party, let stuff slide, and just leave feeling rejuvenated, or you can let it take you down. It's your choice. But let's talk to Dr. Alan, as he's going to give you some really great clinical nuggets, and we're going to talk about what to do if you need to peace out from a party, what to do if things become overwhelming, how to say no to parties, all kinds of things. So let's jump into the podcast. Hey, Health Junkies. I have Dr. Alan Goodwin on, and we are going to be talking all about how to manage holiday stress, because boy, in my practice, it's one of the main things I see over and over again, where folks will come in and go, "Doctors, give me needles. I just need to like zen out for the next hour so I don't have to deal with life." So I decided, you know what? When Dr. Alan came knocking and saying, "Hey, let me talk about holiday stress," I was like, "Yes, let's do this." So Dr. Alan, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thanks, Janine. It's really, really nice to talk with you.
So obviously you've coned in on it. A lot of people have. And in your profession, you've probably seen all kinds of different ways that this impacts folks over the years. I always love to start the podcast out with a story. And I'd love to hear from you. Either your craziest holiday story that's either happened to you or that someone has told you, we won't name any names or anything. Give us a little story of what the holidays bring for folks sometimes.
I don't know if I could think of a story. I mean, I'm so oriented toward not telling stories.
Yeah.
Because I hear stories all day long that I can't ever tell, you know? But I mean, just the idea of how people are trying so hard and it can blow up in faces, you know, because people, everybody's different, everybody is trying. And the holidays bring all that stuff out, especially these days with all the stresses. And
Oh,
so, what expectations different people have for the get-togethers and what agendas people have, you know, how that all that stuff can get activated. And
yeah.
so, whether it's, you know, unpleasant arguments or, you know, discussions that nobody really wanted to have during the holiday, and you know, old baggage. There's all kinds of, there are so many pressures people deal with around the holidays because the expectations are so intense that everybody has.
Yeah.
You need to have fun. You need to be happy. There's something wrong with you if you're not happy now, you know? So
Yeah.
it lays a foundation for all kinds of issues that can come up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, there's definitely that theme in life too of having expectations or how you expect something to go, and then when it doesn't go that way, and now we kind of, think, what did I do wrong? What's wrong with me? Now, I think now's probably a good time to talk about the Hallmark movie concept. And I think this is where a lot of folks will see how wonderful the holidays look on TV with input the same, different characters, same story over and over again. Have you seemed to find that the Hallmark effect does be is like kind of the predominant thing where someone's looking for the perfect, the perfect decorations, the perfect dinner, and then of course ladies and the perfect engagement story too. So that
Yeah.
seemed to be kind of how are they getting it
Yeah.
right?
It's so funny that you're asking that because living in LA, I've had clients who are writers or who are involved in the production process with Hallmark. And it's like, yeah, certain things cannot happen in those stories, you know. They just are not designed for certain things to happen that do happen in real life and that are really unpleasant. I mean, I think in psychotherapy, we're always trying to strike a balance between, you know, not being overly focused on the negative, but then also not needing to ignore the negative, not needing to ignore that there are struggles that get activated around the holidays. We're always struggling, but there are particular ones around the holidays. So, yeah, of course. I mean, those movies that, you know, present a picture without struggle or with every struggle being resolved. You know, struggle being minor, and every struggle is re resolved.
It's quite impressive. It's quite impressive how that happens. And
Yeah.
yeah, I also found myself, getting lost in those movies and going, I wish my holiday, would be this way. Now, I came from a fun family of let's put it this way, folks who really like to drink. And so this too, I think the drinking side of things, the eating side of things can really bring up things for folks too, if there's some eating disorder kind of backgrounds as well. So of course, my big first question is, all right, we all kind of know our issues. How do we start to plan for heading into the holidays? What's the first step folks need to really start thinking about to survive the holidays?
Well, I mean, there's knowing and there's knowing. So the first thing is really understanding what's going on for you. What I practice is a form of mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapies. It's a goal-directed form of therapy, focuses on people's strengths and identifying honestly what the struggles are and honoring that everybody's struggling all the time, you know, even when we're having fun. I mean, there's a struggle to maintain the fun. And so, I mean, the Eastern ideas are the ones that I'm drawn to that are more about being real about that core struggle that we experience. So all of that stuff gets activated at the holidays, and especially around expectations. And of course, substance use is about coping. It's about coping with all of this. And you know, it's really a kind of a form of leaving. Of not being as present, and it makes it easier to be there. And so, you know, if we're going to do some therapy around that, what we'd be looking at is, you know, what is the desire to leave about? Because, you know, we use that term tripping. I use it all the time in therapy, but not just for drugs. We trip in all sorts of ways. In other words, we leave, we're less present. Really, meditation is about coping with the tendency to trip, to leave. To not be present with myself, with you in this moment. And so anytime we're tripping, anytime we're leaving, anytime we're using a substance or texting excessively or thinking, analyzing excessively, meditating excessively, exercising. I mean, even healthy things we can do as a way of getting away from the world rather than being more present. And so anytime we're doing that, we have the opportunity to step back and say, what was I leaving? Anytime I'm going to something, I'm also leaving something. And so one of the things we work on in therapy is trying to be more aware of what I'm leaving and when and why, and the demands that I'm placing on myself and on other people and things around me have a lot to do with whether I feel like I'm feeling essentially burnout, you know, like I can't, I have more on my plate than I can manage.
Interesting, interesting. So it brings me to an image I have from last Thanksgiving, and my family. I'll call my family out. They're cool with it. So we're sitting around, and I was looking at all of the folks like 40 and under. Every single person at one point was on the phone, like just all in the same room, sitting there on the phone. Now, I had my older cousin basically say, "I'm checking the phone at the door." This year. So she's like, this year, everyone puts their phone at the door. You can keep your coats on. I'm putting a space for the phones. Now, let's put it this way. Is that necessarily healthy, or should we have that ability to be able to leave if we need to? Or do we excuse ourselves to the bathroom? You know, what do folks do if they need to leave for a minute? They need to just peace out for a minute. What's the proper, pro not proper protocol, but what's a good protocol?
That's a great question. I mean, just the fact that you're asking the question shows an awareness that a lot of people aren't willing to have, you know, like it's just not okay, you know. And the reality is there are all sorts of reasons why people need to peace out for a little bit. People who are introverted are usually way too demanding on themselves and too aware of everything that's going on around them. They're much more aware generally than people who are extroverted are. And so it can be really exhausting being in a get together with a lot of people. So, I mean, you know, one way to cope would be to dose yourself on it. And if there are ways for you to get away, like on a micro level from a conversation by, you know, putting your plate away or going to the bathroom or refilling your water or drink or seeing somebody that you haven't talked with or I have to go talk with them, you know, finding some way to get away. And can't you script that ahead of time? You know, again, on the subject of demands, isn't it okay if it will help you for you to prepare ahead of time, even with lines? It's not dishonest, it's just being prepared. You know, there's a guy wrote a book about stress inoculation. That's what he termed it. So like
Interesting.
the yeah, like the analogy to it, to getting a shot for malaria, if you're going where there's malaria. So before you go to a place where you know emotionally you're going to get activated in certain ways, you know, cognitively in terms of, you know, your thoughts, your perceptions, how you interpret stuff, how you tend to get triggered because of the way that you tend to feel when you know, think certain ways. So preparing for that, you know, I know Aunt Rose tends to do such and such. You know, how can I be ready for it? You know, it helps to prepare ahead of time.
And for preparation, and this is something, folks, I'll give you guys my little scoop, because I adore my family, but they all have their intricacies, much like many families do. And oftentimes I'll run the scenario through my head, because let's face it, you know, when you're working on yourself, but your family members or certain people aren't, they're going to be in their same loop pattern. But what you can choose is to change it, right? And so I've always been like, all right, I'm gonna brainstorm how it may go, because it's the same every year. And then I think about like, okay, for this situation, I'm gonna do this. For this situation, I'm gonna, you know, and try, right? I can't necessarily say absolutely it's gonna go my way, because now we're back to expectations. But would you recommend for folks to sit down and maybe even write it out, maybe even kind of come up with like a plan in their head?
Yeah, and you could even create invitations where you know, set a certain expectation for what we want this get together to be about. You know, I mean, the holidays bring up all sorts of feelings like grief. You're always aware when you're together with family that there are certain people who aren't there, that you'd like to be there, whether they relocated or people passed away. There are lots of reasons people get divorced. And still we can have mixed feelings about, missing those other people who aren't still there. So you can, for instance, set the expectation of really trying to be mindful of celebrating that we're all together, especially after COVID, that, we're here, that we're healthy, avoiding certain topics. You can identify certain topics, like the ones that we know about, politics, how people should be. You can avoid certain ways of being, like teaching is a good thing to try to be mindful to avoid. Try to be aware when you're being taught by someone and it's irritating you, it's feeling disrespectful. And so if you can go, another inoculation is the need for respect, and instead to try to be compassionate, because exactly what you said, I mean, some one of the problems is no matter what steps we take ahead of time, some people really aren't available to do this kind of work on themselves and introspection, So, you may not invite certain people, or be prepared for the way certain people are. Like you were saying, I think it's a great idea to just be aware of how you are going to get activated. There's the metaphor, people push our buttons. We've all heard that expression. You can add to that by thinking, you have control over the power that is connected to that button. You're the power source. So how much it impacts you when your button gets pressed. Simpler way of thinking of it is when they press your buttons, it's going to hurt more if you've got a bruise there. So before you go to the party, heal the bruises, be less vulnerable,
I like that. I like that. I would think about that too with the pushing the buttons and the power concept is you have the power of how you react to it. And you have the power to brush it off, like you're saying too, which is some of it's deep, right? We have some conversations in the family that are deep stuff. I think what I would say next, just kind of looking at it, let's talk a little bit about going to the party versus being the host. Because I think that can also bring up very different triggers for certain folks. If someone's going to be the host, what kind of things do you think that those individuals should be thinking about ahead of time to help them with, say, getting, helping with preparing the meal, say, helping with help during not like during the day, things of that nature that may be triggers, and same thing with them. Sometimes a lot of hosts I'll find that they end up in the kitchen the whole day, and then they feel like they missed the whole party.
Yeah, it's just really hard, and it's complicated because it's not just the host, it's the context. It's what, so you can say, well, okay, easy answer. The answer is don't make unreasonable demands of yourself. Be kinder to yourself. That's definitely true. Make things manageable. Definitely true. But the reality, and this is where it just is difficult, and this is where in therapy a lot of the time we're just honoring, yeah, you're confronting a really difficult situation. Because like some family members are not part of that program. So they're going to have certain demands. They're going to come to your home with a demand that the party be a certain way, the dinner be a certain way, that a certain food be served, and that it be served exactly the way they remember it. So what demand can you let go of within yourself to satisfy that other person's demands? I like distinguishing expectations from demands, because really, it's understandable for me to expect or want something to go a certain way. If I'm going to be really depressed afterward, what it's revealing to me is I had a demand that it be that way. So it's a more intense thing than just an expectation or a desire. And the stuff is hard. There's a lot of wonderful work written about vulnerability and the power of vulnerability, and that's all wonderful. I agree with it. It can really, undermine a sense of shame that you struggle with inside. But what I was referring to before about not going to get-togethers like this to into vulnerable a state is be aware of what needs you're coming to the gathering with. Because some people are just not going to take care and nurture those needs effectively. You're going to need to.
Right. You know, that brings a really good point out that you said choosing not to go versus going. Let's talk about that for a minute because I think a lot of people, you know, don't go to parties and maybe make it not the best situation because they won't call and say they're not going to show up. They just don't show up. Kind of the cancel culture slash ghosting family members concept. Say you've got a party, say you've got something you've been invited to, and you're like, I just am not in a place to deal with this right now. How do you back out? How do you weigh it out? What do you do?
You know, it's a really good question because what it draws attention to is the intrapersonal versus the interpersonal, right? There's a question of how do you manage it within yourself, the intrapersonal, but that's a different question than how do you manage it with somebody else? What do you say to them? Because I think it's really important to acknowledge some people, no matter what you say, no matter how, quote, appropriate what you say is, no matter how kind what you say is, it's not going to fly. It's just not going to be okay with them. And so being aware of that you have control over your intentions, you have control over, you know, how you try to treat people, but you don't have control over whether it sort of works, whether it creates that effect in the other person. And with regard to who you invite and whether you go, one of the problems with the holidays is it brings together some people with some other people who behave in really toxic ways. And, you know, sometimes you do have to cut off relationships with those people, and you may do that and nobody notices because you don't have to get together with them throughout the year. But then the holiday comes and it comes up again. And yeah, I mean, one option is to really be mindful of what get-togethers you make yourself a part of.
And if it's worth it to go through all the stress leading up, because I've had patients come to me and go, I mean, it's like late October, and they're like, I can't do Christmas this year. And you're like, wow, it's late October. We got month, you know, like weeks before you have to deal with this. You know, this is a lot of thought process focused on something when you could be enjoying your life.
And Christmas brings up a whole other, I mean, as we've been talking, maybe because it's sooner, I'm thinking more
Yeah,
about Thanksgiving. But,
sure.
you know, there's the whole gift giving
Yes.
part and the pressures, the financial pressures people are under and the standards they feel like they have to meet and what gift giving even represents. And there's an interesting other dynamic that happens around Christmas time, which is now, and I don't know. My sense is when I was a child, this was not true. But now it's not uncommon for grandparents to have more resources than parents do. And so gift giving standards that the parents are trying to set with their young kids can be violated by the grandparents because the grandparents want to give more and can give more. But that creates a problem. You know, when I was growing up, it was more, I think it was more common for parents to be in a better financial position than their grandparents, than their parents were, you know?
I definitely grew up that way. Definitely. Yeah, I think there's been a huge shift, and I think that is a huge thing. I've heard that a lot from different folks. And now it seems that a lot of folks are gearing up and panicking because of inflation and what's happened now in this situation. And yeah, it's so hard. How do you work with folks on going back to the true meaning of gift giving? Where it doesn't mean the most expensive gift is the best gift. How do you work with folks on sorting that through?
I think it's about talking about values, about really what do you value. And this is where it can become difficult because, like, some parents do a great job talking with their young kids about what this is all about. And then, you know, what do you do if the grandparents come over with, like, you know, six or eight gifts? You know.
You're like, oh no. Yeah,
So,
it's hard.
yeah. And I think this is where I think the Eastern approaches are really speak to me because it's about compassion. It's about recognizing, you know, these are difficult issues and trying to have open dialogues with people, again, about your intentions, where you talk with people about oftentimes when you're trying to do something difficult like this, just letting the other person know what you're trying to do, you know, what your intention is. And I want you to know I'm trying to explain something to you that is difficult because I don't want to not seem like I'm grateful. I don't want to not seem thankful, and I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be insulting to you. So I hope you can hear it that way. Just having a dialogue that includes that talk about the dialogue can be really helpful.
And like doing this, say, maybe a month before Christmas, doing this right after Thanksgiving. Everyone does a powwow after Thanksgiving dinner. I'm kidding. But like, what when would be a good time to sit down, say the grandparents, and say, hey, look, we're trying to instill this in the kids. Help us out.
So it's funny. So I'm going to piggyback on the powwow thing because I don't know if this is what you were talking about. But just yesterday, I was talking with somebody about the conversation after the get together, the conversations after the get together that can be like really unkind. That can be the place where, you know, did you taste that apple pie or, you know.
Yes, that those can even be a lot of triggering, or people calling someone later and saying, oh my God, the pie was too mushy, or the the turkey was too dry. Yes, that can be a thing. And yeah, I was kind of talking about that, but also like, when do you bring up the expectations for Christmas gifting kind of thought process?
One of the things that's usually talked about by therapist types around this time of year is the idea of the way the expectations can cause us to trip ourselves up because people are going to be who they are, you know? Yeah, you can use the holidays to sort of reassess who, what your values are, and you know, have you been living consistently with those values? And you know, new year, new you. You can make resolutions and everything, and all that's you know, good. But one of the ways that we can disappoint ourselves is by expecting everybody else to be behaving in ways that they just don't, you know. And so, how can you prepare ahead of time? You can do your best to talk with people and to plan for it, but also to take steps to prevent certain things from happening. And some of the things we've already talked about, it could be about who you invite. It could be about really, some people need more firm limits. You know, like we're really not going to have more than one gift per person or something like that, you know. Or we're having a gift the price limit. And you know, in the past we've done this and it's very generous of you. You usually go over, but really we want to ask you not to do that because you know, some people really don't feel good when that happens. You know, so having a real direct conversation with people, yeah, I agree with what you're implying ahead of time can be really helpful.
No, I like that. I like being direct. I think that's something that's been lost in society quite a bit. This concept of tiptoeing around the real conversation. I find it's interesting that a lot of people are more in the ignore it and maybe it won't happen category is what I found. But it seems that the more direct you are, the more the response comes back. You might not like the response, but at least you got it out there.
Yeah, it's hard. Don't you think it's kind of a bipolar? I hesitate to say that because I don't mean the term, the psychological term, but it's like you've got social media where everybody's used to people being just way too blunt, rude, downright rude, you know, saying things that you just would not say to someone's face unless you're really behaving in an obnoxious way. And then on the other hand, because of that, you've got people who are so avoidant of interactions because it seems like interactions just blow up. You know, one of the things I talk about in therapy is, you know, we try to use metaphors in therapy. It tends to help. So one is in life, you know, you're going to struggle. Everyone struggles. One way to think of the struggle is we encounter open flames throughout our life. People treat us badly or stuff happens. It, what I have control over isn't that. What I have control over is how flammable I am. So whether I nurture myself, whether I'm exercising, sleeping well, eating well, taking care of my physical and psychological needs. That's the stuff that's really going to help me not be as flammable, because I'm going to encounter those people. And one way to think of what I encounter, the open flames, is with compassion. You can say, I'm going to encounter, I don't know if I can swear on here, so I won't, jerks. Okay, I'm going to encounter jerks. But a different way of looking at those people is, I'm going to encounter people who are struggling, and I've struggled, and so I want to try to expect that, and I cope differently. I take it less personally when I see a person's struggle underneath their bad behavior.
I like that. I like that. The flammable, how flammable that I'm gonna use that.
Cheers.
It's definitely something, I think about it, I'm going, even just like someone cuts you off on the freeway and you have the choice to be just like incite into flames, or you can just smolder, put it down on smolder and let it go. And I'm thinking, yeah, there's a lot of different things that can cascade, let's put it that way, until it becomes a stick of dynamite and you blow. And that is, it's something that I think is a very important topic. Folks, you got it. I mean, this is huge right here. And I think that's almost one of the ways I'm thinking to prep myself for all of the holiday day stuff, going, okay, do I choose to become dynamite, a stick of dynamite? Or I'm gonna let it smolder and let it go, because we don't know people's stories. And I think that's one of the other things that's really important is, we know someone face value because we don't necessarily get to know them very well. Some of the relatives maybe we don't even know well, and we just don't know their history, where they're coming from. And sometimes having that compassion to meet them where they're at and just accept that they've had some stuff under their belt. It's
Yeah,
huge.
definitely. I was looking a minute ago for the sheet of paper. I don't see it right here, but what I use in therapy with clients is a simple triangle with double-sided arrows on all sides, and the corners of the three corners of the triangle are thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, because those three are interacting and causing each other all the time. So, like the expectations we were talking about before, or the demands. Those are thoughts, right? Those are interpretations. What I believe has to happen, how I believe people have to treat me all the time. But the more intense those are, the more intense the feelings they're going to trigger when somebody cuts you off. And for a long time, I used to think, okay, if I've ever done it, I have to have compassion when someone does it to me. And so, like, cutting someone off, like, damn it. Done that. But then I got to a point, I think with the mindfulness work, I got to a point where, no, the whole compassion idea is whether I've struggled in that way or not, it really can have room for recognizing that they're struggling. Even though I've never done that, I can have compassion for a person who's struggling so much that they're doing that. And the good news is, the worse they behave, because some people in therapy, sometimes we talk about, the person will say, yeah, but what about someone who does this? I mean, come on, that's unforgivable. Really, the more outrageous a person's behavior, the more clear there's a struggle going on there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a huge thing to think about, that a lot of people don't really bring to light, is that struggle and what they might be going through.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you are going to expose yourself to their struggle again. It doesn't mean that you have to trust them if they're not able to behave in trustworthy ways. It just means recognizing that their bad behavior toward you is not because you deserved it. It's because they're struggling and they're reacting in really unreasonable way.
So I guess now I'm thinking about, compassion. I'm thinking about the struggle. I'm thinking about impact on you. And let's go. I'm gonna be devil's advocate for a second. What if it gets to the point where you're just like, I've tried all my tools. I've tried to be compassionate. I've tried to go through this, and you're just so triggered. What would you say is good etiquette when you're like, I just have to leave. I have to get out of this situation. what would you tell someone to do, or what's a good thought process?
I'm glad you're asking that. I really, one of the frustrations I've always had, I was a lawyer before I became a psychologist. So I
Oh,
wasn't,
wow.
I wasn't first drawn to this field. And so I come at this kind of with a kind of cynicism, I think. And so I always try to not talk about my own problems with my clients, because that's not, it's their time, but to not give the impression that I don't have some of the same struggles we're talking about. This is about being human. And so I think the first thing is to really be kind enough to yourself to acknowledge that there's a really difficult thing going on right now. It's kind of, there's an analogy, what we're talking about right now, to a panic attack, where you feel this intense urgency, I've got to do something now. So depending on how intense the urgency is, I think you need to give yourself permission not to have the right line, not to have the right words. You really can just get out of there. Like someone's driving and they're having a panic attack. The first thing they need to do is pull over. Ideally find a side street, but somehow get yourself out of danger, pull over, and then get to a place where you can get out of your car. Ideally, you can, walking tends to be helpful. It can activate it in some people because it can change your breathing in a way that exacerbates the panic attack. But the point is to get yourself to a place where you can regulate yourself. And that's different for different people. Breathing tends to help. So getting out of there and then doing a breathing exercise. And the key in the breathing exercise is the exhale. A lot of people don't realize that. They inhale and they're already inhaling. So it just makes it worse. You wind up inhaling too much.
Oh
So
no.
the exhale makes room for the for more inhales. But yeah, getting yourself out of there however you need to.
Yeah. I think that is something that, I've been in a situation where I have an uncle who just really likes to drink. And I was always who he would latch on to when I was a kid. And I'd get to hear all the stories and stories. And then by like the third year of me hearing the same stories, I started to be like, how do I get away? And of course, all the family members are enjoying, drinking, things of that nature. And they're not paying attention to the fact that I was trying to get away and I couldn't. And so I ended up in one situation running out of the house and just running as far as I could, and it's probably like negative who knows what in the middle of the winter in Illinois. And I think for a lot of people, this is a true, like, real experience where they're, like you said, you just need to work on your exhale, like get out away from the situation. And going outside is my favorite excuse in this case, where I'm like, I'm gonna go take a walk. And usually the kids will go with me, which I'm fine with. I'm gonna play with the kids. So I don't know if a lot of people, if this resonates with anybody, but I certainly like the idea of that longer exhale, even if you have to like jump in your car
I
and
think it's a
just.
great idea to just go walk. And you're also reminding me, you might talk to other people, to other family members who can be resources at those times. If you see me on the couch with Uncle Joe,
Help, help.
please, please come over,
I like this strategizing with the family ahead of time. Your people who are your like go-to folks. That's something I would be thinking, that could be really, really useful. And I don't know how many people do that. I know some probably do, but this is great time to bring it up. Find the family members. Yeah.
And again, I would just emphasize coming from a place of compassion. Everybody is struggling. That it doesn't excuse, somebody, drinking too much and being obnoxious. It doesn't excuse it, but that's really not the point. It's about how can you cope with the behavior that you may not be able to stop. And again, there's the issue of, what kind of atmosphere do you want at the party, and deciding, whether everybody's going to be invited,
That makes perfect sense. That makes
what you're going to
perfect
serve,
sense. Down to the T, I think planning ahead, and this is why I definitely wanted you to come on and chat, because I think planning ahead is huge. Now, of course, I want to talk about your book a little bit, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind, because all of this In terms of holiday parties, there is that saving face component that, just like I'd mentioned, the full-on kind of anxiety of having to get out of the house and run. I think a lot of people are also looking for some sanity, just in general this time of year. So tell us a little bit about your book. Give us the background. I love the picture on it, by the way, if it's on
Oh,
point.
thanks. Yeah, thanks. Me too. So it's playing on that phrase, saving face, but it really is about cosmetic surgery. And
Interesting.
it's become so common. I mean, like 20 million procedures, invasive and non-invasive, every year just in the US. And
Wow.
it's very, very popular in other countries too. So the many, many, many people are changing the way they look in minor and in major ways. And so Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind, the subtitle is Bringing Mindfulness to Your Cosmetic Procedure. It's about doing it in a mindful way, knowing when to do what and when to stop, and what demands you're placing on yourself. How important are you making your appearance? I don't intend to tell you whether to have a procedure or not with the book, just intending to provide some tools for people to use to assess what their values are. And you know how people can get caught up in changing themselves on the outside, really, when oftentimes what they're wanting to change is something on the inside.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I sometimes like to think about the holidays as that time when you haven't seen folks for a while. It's almost like your high school reunions where you want to look so good with this facade, this appearance, and then it either goes the way you want to or it doesn't. And sometimes, I don't know how much I don't think anyone is doing face surgical procedures to impress their family at the holidays per se, but maybe, I mean, that is a thing possibly. But what I'm getting at with this to link it, folks, is that it's much like the impression, trying to impress people, but really what's going on inside. And same thing with the holidays. We can tie this back as to, being aware of what's going inside you. And working on you because you can't change other people, that is for sure.
And a big part of this is about body image.
Yes.
And body image stuff gets activated at the holiday parties. You know,
Yes.
there's all the desserts and everything, and there is still shaming. You know, you're supposed to want the desserts, and yet, you know, there are people who will be shaming you if you have the desserts. And so it really raises those questions we were talking about before, about who you bring and what people's behaviors are, who you invite, in other words, to the party, and how do you protect yourself so that you allow yourself to enjoy yourself at the party and not be so consumed with the body image issues. You know, we treat our bodies sometimes when people get too compulsive about that stuff, they don't respect the body's ability to recover from, you know, a piece of pie or two or whatever, if you overindulge. And so some of the things we were talking about before about, you know, using food as a drug, using alcohol as a drug, you know, you have to be able to reassess afterward, sort of debrief within yourself and forgive yourself.
No, that, I mean, now I'm thinking about other things that I've seen in my family, what I've heard from other people, what I've seen on TV shows, things of that nature. My family was always like, a moment on the lips, the lifetime on your hips. So watch out how many of those you have, in one aspect. But then at the same thing, my grandma was always like, if you weren't cold or hungry, this is my Polish grandmother, if you weren't cold or hungry, something's wrong with you. So it was like food, food, food. And then the other side of the family was kind of like, what's going on there? And then we have that judgment. And so I think a lot of people might even experience this kind of thing. And especially for women, if a family member's like, honey, you're looking a little pudgy lately, or they're like, you are so thin, you need to eat more. I mean, the mind blown kind of concept that happens in your mind with that is out of control. Out of control, which it is hard. So planning ahead on that one for sure. And eating disorders, I mean, that's a whole another topic for stress for folks. with the holidays. What do you typically have folks do in that plan? Do you have them working with nutritionists to plan out like how the holiday is going to go, or how does that work on your end? What's your protocol?
It's a great idea. I mean, a lot of it depends on what people are willing to do, what they can do, what they have access to. You know, nutritionists are, you know, so helpful when people can have access to them. But you know, some of the ideas with regard to managing the way that you eat also apply to managing your finances around the holidays, just planning ahead, noticing, you know. So for instance, you can prevent overspending by noting what you're spending and by being mindful about it, by tracking what you're spending. And we know that there are a lot of diet plans that work because part of it is tracking, just keeping track of what you're eating. And you know, another thing about diets that work is they allow people to be human. You know, certain foods are pleasurable, and you know, to deprive yourself of that is really not a sustainable plan. You know, so all of this, what I like about the way you're talking about it is that it's enabling us to have a conversation about reality, that these things are difficult. You know, managing, balancing, striking a balance that's healthy, it's difficult, and sometimes you'll overdo it, you know, one end or the other. And so being kind to yourself and allowing yourself to recalibrate is, I think, a really important part of it.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. So I think the takeaway, and help me with supporting this here, Alan, is that really it's having a conversation with the others, having a conversation with yourself around the holidays, and knowing what triggers you, what kind of things are going to come up, who might be the key players, and going in with a plan and options to adapt should you need to.
Yep, that's really what mindfulness is about. Being mindful, being aware, and preparing ahead of time really helps. That's what that stress inoculation is about. Knowing how you, knowing yourself, knowing how you tend to get triggered. And over time, you can work on that. But being real with yourself about whether you've licked it, whether or do you really need to prepare still, because it's still triggers you when so and so does this or that, or says this or that, and you know they're going to say it, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can almost guarantee if they're the same culprits. Like I mentioned before, every holiday for me, there's certain things that are on repeat, and it's just gonna happen. And you just have to be like, okay, wait for it. I almost get to the point now, it's comical, because I'm like, wait for it, and on cue. All right. And
That's
then
good.
box checked. Step one just happened. Perfect. Now this is a holiday, you know. And I tend to find humor in a lot of things, and I hope that a lot of folks, you know, can take that away too, and really just kind of be it like it is, say it like it is. And you know, I think for a lot of us, the holidays have gone a lot so far off of what they mean. And that's the hard part. Is just getting back to connecting with your family, and just really being able to have good, solid conversations, and avoid other ones if you can. And when in doubt, like for me, I go play with the kids. So
Or the dogs.
isn't that like the best? You know what, folks? That is something we should mention. If there are dogs, cats, any critters, that's like instant bring the like stress down. Yes.
Invite the critters.
So when in doubt, if there are any animals around, go to the animal. You guys, I mean, that's all. You guys know me. I have golden retrievers, and like for me, it's like as soon as like things hit the fan, we're like dog outside, play, good. So, well, Alan, I think we've talked about quite a bit in this realm of giving folks some good tools to kind of literally save face over the holidays. But I really do want folks to have access to your book, because the mindfulness around the surgical procedures too, and how many people really are trying to use these as a boost and then feeling empty inside afterwards. I think this is a huge concept. So give us the scoop Where can folks find you on social media, on your website? Where can they get the book? Give us the whole breakdown so folks can follow you and get to know you a little bit more too.
Very good. Thanks. Yeah, I have a TikTok channel. It's Dr. Alan Goodwin, and
Nice.
Instagram. And there's some meditations on YouTube also, and my website. And at my website, I try to describe the type of therapy that I do. And yeah, the book really does focus on preparing for making the decision about a cosmetic procedure and then preparing for it before and after. But it also focuses a lot on what we do in therapy and how mindfulness can help us understand really what our values are, how we're treating ourselves. And so it's a broader focus in the book. It's primarily aimed at cosmetic procedures. So there's a lot in there about mindfulness. So yeah, Saving Face Without Losing Your Mind is the name of it. It'll be on Amazon this week. It's coming out.
Excellent, excellent. This is great, because I'm thinking for a lot of people. I mean, having been in the medical field for over almost 20 years now, it's a big thing in looking at the whole aspect of before and after any cosmetic procedure. And I think for a lot of folks, it is something that it's not addressed. You know, you're going to go into the surgeon, they're going to show you all the amazing things that they can do, but there's not, you know, the concept upstairs. So are you helping folks? Now, I know you're licensed in California. Are you working with folks just in California, or are you also doing telehealth? How does it work for folks that want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, telehealth has blown open the opportunities a lot, like I'm sure you know. So you can see people in, and so for instance, because I'm licensed in California, I only provide psychotherapy to people in California. But coaching, when it's appropriate, you can do over state lines, but it would be different than psychotherapy. So yeah, sometimes I do that with people across state lines.
Okay, excellent. Yes, thanks for sharing. I know definitely, folks, you do want to be aware of state things and having folks making sure they're practicing within their scope of practice and in proper states. So if you're in California and you do in-person visits as well, yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm in my
Not,
office
not.
now.
Nice,
Yeah.
nice. It looks nice and cozy, very zen-like. I'm seeing tidbits of zen. So, folks, very chill over there.
Yeah, that's my
So,
gong behind me.
that's what I was wondering what
That's
that
what it
was. I
is.
was like, I'm seeing something back there. I was curious. Excellent. I mean, a little bit of the Eastern medicine can never go wrong. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much, Alan, for coming on. Folks, you can find him at Dr. Alan, Alan Goodwin, GOODWIN.com. You can learn more about him there. And we're just hoping that we have passed on a little bit of gems for you guys to all survive the holidays. Thanks again
Thanks.
for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Janine. It's really nice talking with
Same here.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.